In this session, we're going to talk about one of the most misunderstood concepts known to man, and that's where do our emotions fit and how do they affect mindset? Obviously, emotions have a massive impact on mindset. When we look at someone and we say, you know, what happened? Did you get out on the wrong side of the bed today or whatever? Meaning that their emotions have totally warped their mindset, not just for a little while, but for the whole day or whatever. Conversely, we see the opposite. People who are so bright, so happy that nothing seems to upset them, no matter how badly it goes. Therefore, we've got to grab a hold of our emotions, and that's not necessarily going to be an easy thing to do. The reason why is that as far as our education is concerned, there is plenty of backup for us physically. In other words, if I said to you, go and find out what you need to know about diet and nutrition and exercise and all those sorts of things, well, there's just endless reams of material available for you to grab hold of for free. And the same is true, not just for physical, but for mental. So you can go and study, you can go and do courses in everything under the sun. A lot of that can be free or low cost. And therefore, what you see is that physically and mentally, we're quite supported in terms of information. But as far as emotions are concerned, did you ever go to a class called These Are Emotions and How to Handle Them? And the obvious answer is no, and yet, here they are, these things that control our lives. You know, it's the reason that we're driving down the road to go somewhere is we think we'll be happier if we go and do whatever that thing is, whether that's visit your mother-in-law, go to work, or go on holidays. Mostly our vision of that is I'm going to go here, or I'm going to go there because I'll be happier if I do that than if I don't. People have children because they think we'll be happier with children if we don't. Well, they get married because they figure they'll be happier married than if they don't. A lot of this stuff you'll see comes unraveled later on. A lot of people want to get unmarried, and it's very difficult to undo having children. But the vision at the time is this will be a source of happiness. Therefore, it's true to say that our emotions drive us, but they are the things that we know the least about. So my focus in this session is to deliver you enough understanding to be able to take yourself forward in leaps and bounds based on some pretty simple concepts. The first thing to understand is that the word emotion comes from a contraction of the phrase energy in motion. What that tells us is you cannot think your way through a feeling, and yet that's exactly what our culture says to us. As a pretty simple explanation or illustration, both my parents, 88 years old, still alive, one of them more alive than the other, but you know, my mum dear to me, but obviously nearing the end of her life. And at some point when we go to her funeral when she's passed away, then someone is going to say to me, don't be sad, and of course I will be, but they'll say, don't be sad, think about what a great life she had. And it's in that sentence that you can see the Western explanation of emotions, and that is, don't be sad. That's actually an instruction. Don't be angry, don't be sad, don't be ashamed, don't be guilty, don't be, don't be, don't be, don't be. So, don't be sad. Well, how do we not be sad? Well, switching to thinking. So, think about what a great life she had. Now, I'm here to tell you that you cannot think your way through a feeling. And when my mum passes, I'm going to be tremendously sad, probably for a long period of time. And maybe for the rest of my life, that residual sadness will be there. Because, you know, such an integral person, such a magnificent demonstration of everything that's great in my life. And so, of course, I'm going to miss her. And that's really what sadness is about. It's about loss and grief. But we're told not to do it. We're told to push it down. So we can't think our way through it. We've got to find something better. So the word emotion, just understand that sadness, in the case that I'm talking about, will be a sensation in my body. It'll start out as a sensation. When you're joyful, you're going to want to jump and leap and sing and big smile on your face. So energy runs through our body and it comes out one of the channels that are the common emotions. Now, there are hundreds of emotions, but I'm going to talk about six basics. And the reason we talk about the six basics is that if we go to the hundreds of emotions, then we're going to be talking for months and we're still not going to get any clearer than we would be on the six basics. So the first thing to describe is that these six basics are, of course, not the hundreds, but pretty much all the others are versions of these. So the psychologists tell us that these six basics, pretty much everything else is a version or combination of these six. If you look at them, you'll notice I've got a gap between them, that there are two groups of three. If I said to you, what is the difference between those two groups, then pretty much everybody's going to say, well, love, peace, and joy, they're the positive emotions, and anger, sadness, and fear, they're the negative emotions. Or you might say that love, peace, and joy are the good emotions, and anger, sadness, and fear are the bad emotions. It depends on your background and your training and those kind of things, but pretty much we would prefer love, peace, and joy. Anger, sadness, and fear, rarely do we wake up in the morning and say, you know, I think I'd like to have a sad day today. That's different to saying, oh, waking up and feeling sad. That's probably pretty much a genuine thing. We'll talk about that in a moment. So these two groups are labeled good and bad, and what it means is that we pretty much are encouraged to go in the direction of love, peace, and joy, and to avoid anger, sadness, and fear. Now, I said before, nobody's gone to a class called These Are Your Emotions and How to Handle Them. So what is the teaching? Well, the teaching happens culturally. So when you displayed anger or sadness or fear when you were young, then things would happen around you that were not so good. So you'd either be shut down or told to go away or sent to your room or punished or whatever. But of course, love, peace, and joy, they were pretty much accepted. And so there was no specific sit-down lesson, but there was lots of behaviour changes around you depending on where you went with this. And pretty much the teaching was, love, peace, and joy. You can do as much of that as you like. By the way, don't do too much because you're probably a nutcase. And this anger, sadness, and fear, look, that's pretty bad, don't do it. That's pretty much a teaching. We can talk about why, but that's probably not so important. We will cover it, but let's have a look at it from this point of view. It's okay for us to express or to outwardly show and exhibit love, peace, and joy, but not to do so with anger, sadness, and fear, so we suppress them. And the real question comes, you know, okay, what happens to emotions that we suppress? And there are a couple of things to understand. The first is when we suppress them, then what we mean is that energy that any emotion is contained rather than allowed out. So what that means is that we suppress them inside of our body, that the sensations, we generally shut them down. And over a period of years, we get better and better at closing down the exhibiting of them. So you can be raging angry and not feel a thing. You could be totally sad and not feel anything. You could be scared as and just getting on with it. Because if you've successfully suppressed them for long enough, then you've also tuned out to the sensations in your body that these things are happening. It doesn't mean that they're not happening. It means that you've got the dial turned down so far that reading those things is difficult. Doing anything with them is even more difficult. And so we kind of tend to move off in that direction. The other thing we've got to understand is when you suppress emotion, because it's energy being contained, then we have the situation where, like gunpowder, if you can run with this analogy, if you get a bit of gunpowder and you put it on a sheet of glass or something, and then touch it with a match, then all the way along. And you might have seen that in the movies where they make a fuse to an explosion by laying out some gunpowder and usually out of a keg, wooden keg. I wonder why it came in wooden kegs, but anyway, lay it out like that and hit a lot of match and boom, probably they fired a gun at it and six shooter and boom, and away it went. But you know, if you get that same gunpowder and you wrap it in paper, then we have what we call a bunger and or an explosive device or a cracker, and the tighter you wrap it, the more paper you put around it, the bigger the explosion. And pretty much we can use that analogy with our bodies. The more you suppress it, then the bigger the explosion when it happens. So let's have a look at what that might look like. And what we've got to do is we've kind of got to go for analogy. So I want you to imagine that there's a bucket inside of you, that any anger that you can't express because it's inappropriate, because maybe you'd lose your job or you'd lose a partner or you'd lose a friendship or whatever, that anger goes inside. And we'll imagine that there's a bucket. And the anger goes in the bucket, so the sadness goes in the bucket, love goes in the bucket, fear, peace, any emotion you can't express goes in the bucket because it's actually just bottled up energy. I'm talking about the channels. So love, joy, peace, anger, sadness, and fear are like channels on a TV station. The energy is actually the same. So what happens is all kind of get rammed into the bucket, and that becomes a bit impractical. So a better way to describe this is to say, okay, so let's have a look at it from this point of view. It's better if we separate the buckets and say, okay, so there's a joy bucket, a peace bucket, a love bucket, an anger bucket, a sadness bucket, and a fear bucket. And for every human being on the planet, there's a different level in each bucket. And so in this particular example, this person's got two bits of joy and one bit of peace and three bits of love and three bits of anger and one bit of sadness and two bits of fear bottled up in the buckets. And what that means is this person has been able to act peacefully a lot and display and exhibit a lot of peacefulness, a lot of sadness. But pretty much anger has been ruled out. There's three lots of it in there, and or three units, or however we do that. And fear and joy, they've been repressed as well. So you can see that variations in this amount bottled up in each bucket creates completely different circumstances of every human being, because that's an infinite number of variables. Consequently, we all have our own unique methods for expression. But what happens in these buckets as they fill up? So once a bucket fills up, because what it does, it festers and then it erupts, then what happens is it explodes out. And pretty much you'll notice that we're having this exploding out when the display is greater than the trigger. So if we're talking about anger, then what we would see is that we might be having a divorce about the toothpaste tube being squeezed in the middle. And when you think about it, it's not the toothpaste tube being squeezed in the middle, that's the trigger. So what we talk about is one more drop of anger into the bucket, fills the bucket, it overflows, but it overflows according to the amount that's in the bucket, not according to the toothpaste tube being squeezed in the middle, and we get this massive outpouring. So if you've ever gone ballistic over a trivial event, or you know someone who's gone ballistic over a trivial event, then that's really just a bucket overflowing. And they're pretty out of control with it. And of course, being out of control with it is something that bothers them, so they try and control it more by keeping it more in the bucket. And so it's not unusual to come across someone who's afraid of their own anger, or thinks that they just cry at the drop of a hat, and that probably means that they've got a problem, or that they're scared a lot. And so you'll see that these things overflowing show up in our culture and specific kinds of behavior. So if you know someone who's a pile of anger walking around looking for a place to happen, that's a full anger bucket. And pretty much that's going to be the way it is for the rest of their life, because they don't have a method for emptying the bucket. All that happens is it flows over until it goes back level with the top of the bucket. So it just takes a little bit more and it's full again, and it's going to overflow again. And so we label that, you know, there goes an angry person looking for a place to happen. That shows up as all sorts of weird-ass behavior, you know, road rage and those kind of things. I don't know about other countries in the world, but in Australia, 80% of murder in Australia is domestic. That means someone is putting a knife into the ribs of someone they love. How come? Because they've just flown off the handle, they've lost it at that point. So if bottled-up anger is creating road rage and, you know, damage to another human, and, you know, domestic violence is really uncontrolled anger erupting and, you know, bad behavior as a consequence of these bottled up emotions, then we tend to want to go and fix the trigger and say, well, if we could sort out these people's financial problems, or if we could sort out these problems, it wouldn't be so bad. Actually, we need to show them how to manage what they feel rather than try and change the circumstances, because we can get angry about anything, we can get upset about anything. Conversely, so really what I'm saying is that bottled up anger shows as an eruption, and I use road rage and murder and all those sort of things as and domestic violence as an illustration. But bottled up sadness, you'll know someone who drives at the crop of a hat. So you'll know someone who just bursts into tears. Fascinatingly about that is that men are encouraged to be angry rather than sad or afraid. Not that we want them angry, but we just don't like them being sad or afraid. So young boys are taught, you're a big boy now, don't cry. So men are moved in towards anger is more acceptable than sadness or fear. And so men are more likely to display anger and avoid sadness and fear, even if they are feeling sad or scared. In fact, a lot of men who are permanently angry are actually scared. But they don't know, because they've been trained in the anger channel, meaning encouraged. And that's pretty much all I can do. So if you look at sadness, which is much more where women are encouraged to go, so women are taught that being angry is not very ladylike, and in fact, if you're angry and you're a woman, you're a bitch. So anger's not acceptable for women. Fear is not acceptable for anyone, so sadness is kind of more okay. And men kind of stand around and go, oh, women, they just cry the drop of a hat, and that's not really how we're hardwired, it's more how we are trained. But a full sadness bucket shows up as bursting into tears about anything. And of course, what's hilarious is in my clinical work, I get men over 50 or 55 coming in to me all the time saying, look, I don't know what's happened. You know, I'm a normal bloke. Everything's kind of okay, but I've just found myself crying a lot. And I say to them, ah, somebody ran over the next door neighbour's cat and you burst into tears. And I go, how did you know? And of course, I know by experience that it takes 40 or 50 years for that to build up. The bucket's full. And now it overflows when ordinary things that we could be a little bit sad about trigger the bucket. And they wonder why they're in tears about the next door neighbour's cat being run over. They didn't even know the cat very well. And, you know, whether the cat lived or died didn't bother them. But what happened was the sadness erupted. And you'll have a similar kind of thing in terms of going into any of these emotions when you find yourself getting on the same wavelength. So one of the reasons that men want to shut women down who are crying, in other words, that's an overwhelming thing for somebody who's not good with sadness. What they want to do is when they come across someone who's sad, someone who's crying, someone in tears, the one thing they want to do is stop them being sad, because what happens is we tend to resonate. We tend to get on the same wavelength or pathway. And I'm sure you've had that. I'm sure you've had the experience where you were with someone who was crying and you ended up in tears as well. It's like we can feel their sadness. Technically, you can't. Technically, well, you can identify and you can empathize, but technically what's going on is you're actually feeling your own sadness, and whatever sadness is in your bucket, you're feeling that. And if you start to be in tears along with someone that you know who's in tears, probably really good. You both sit there and have what most people call a good cry. Now, it's good because it's relieving. So there's something magic in that that we'll come to as well. So what you see in our culture is fear eruptions all over the place based on fear being pushed down, sadness eruptions all over the place based on sadness being pushed down. And of course, fear being pushed down creates exactly the same concept, except we call these panic attacks. So when the fear bucket is full, what we start to do is we start to have a fear reaction that is not relevant to the circumstances. And this time, the toothpaste tube being squeezed in the middle, well, that can just be a car backfiring, and boom, overcome by fear, go catatonic, collapse, and away we go. And you'll see that panic attacks are becoming a much bigger thing in our culture. As we are taught less and less about how to handle our emotions, then these three eruptions, fear, sadness, and anger, showing up in the ways that I described, is becoming more and more common. So therefore, we need to know what to do about it. We know that an eruption is not the answer, because all it does is take the top off the bucket. It doesn't empty the bucket. So we need a process that's going to empty the bucket so we're capable of absorbing whatever it is that we need to swallow at the moment for the greater good of our family or our friends or our workplace or whatever it is. So understanding that it's not going to be long until the next eruption, if we just kind of manage it, so to speak, then we're looking for something much bigger than that. And it boils down to this. The healing is actually in the expression of the feeling. What does that mean? It means that we need to get it out. Let's talk about how to do that, because you see, if you don't turn towards the feeling and explore it, you push it down. We've already talked about the consequences of that. What most people don't understand is that those pushed down emotions, then they own us forever, because they determine our urges, they determine our compulsions. You know, if you can't deal with fear, then you've got to get away from it. That means that you can't speak in public or walk near a cliff or whatever it is. The fear actually dominates your life. So if you've got a blockage to success, which is, you'll see in brackets I've got there, self-sabotage, then it's going to be a buried emotion of the kinds that we're talking about. But you see, if it's been underground for a long time, then you won't recognize it, because you'll have lost contact with the originating event. You don't remember it happening. You don't need to remember that it's happening. I've got a solution that's based around not needing to know what took place. But you wouldn't recognize it anyway. And so we have these behaviours that we can't explain, that we can't figure out, that we just can't explain to ourselves, why on earth do I do this? Why did I go off like a volcano? Why do I this or that or the other? And we become quite mystified. What that means is we need a strategy for each one. So essentially, you've got to become much more aware with your emotions. And you'll notice that that's the impact that this course is having. This is an awareness-raising program. The more aware you are of your own personal circumstances, then the much better you are at self-management, the much better you'll be able to get yourself the things that you want to get, to do the things that you want to do, and to be the person that you want to be. What most people don't get is that we need to be emotionally adept. That idea of suppression and expression, you know, some emotion being good and some emotion being bad is completely wrong. There are times when you should be angry. There are times when you should be sad, and there are times when you better be scared, because fear stops you from doing stupid things like playing with the traffic or picking up a snake. And sadness is only appropriate. And anger is when we need to rise up and say, this is not good enough or whatever. So rather than be triggered by our outside circumstances, we need to be in control of our emotions so that our emotions serve us rather than we be pushed around by our urges and our compulsions. So here's the recipe. Basically, you need to go out of your way. If you know that you could be more joyful, and that's pretty much all of us, then what can you do that triggers laughing more? And I'm going to suggest that you get yourself onto YouTube and you go looking for some comedy and you and your friends sit around and have a laugh. If not YouTube, then take yourself to the comedy store. Or how about you invent some games that you play around your house? Maybe you set up a party where everyone can come along in fancy dress or do whatever. But do things where you can deliberately get into the mood where you laugh more, because it's really healthy and really good for you. So more laughter is probably the most important thing that any of us can do. More peace, how do you do that? The simple and most powerful way to do that is to get yourself in nature more often. And if that means walking out in the forest or sitting on the beach or going down to the local park, if you're the kind of person who could get off on hugging a tree, then you need to hug more trees, or you need to hug a tree more often. If it's taking your dog for a walk, then you need to do that more often so that you get connected with the stillness, the peacefulness, and the serenity that is part of what nature really is. You can be on the beach, really violent, storm has gone through, the waves are really big, and a massive amount of activity. You can also feel a real sense of peacefulness in the ongoingness of the world and the planet itself. As far as love is concerned, what we need is we need to deliberately go out of our way to express love more often. There are two ways to do that. One is, are there things that you love to do? Because it's important that you do them. And whether that's gardening or fishing or baking or whatever it is, those are things that you can do. We call them hobbies or we call them interests. And certainly if you, I know someone who handles stress by baking. And when things are getting too much, that's what they do. They cook bread and cakes and all sorts of stuff. If that's the case, then we need to do that more often, because it's a much more calming, much more uplifting thing to do. And all those things are pretty much straightforward concepts. It's not going to take you too much to work out how you can do those. Where things get interesting is in the next three. So what I'm going to suggest is that you do yourself an anger session. If you're of the male persuasion, you want to do, and you're just getting introduced to this material, you probably want to do an anger session once a week for the next 6 to 8 weeks, and then once a month or so. And that means get out a punching bag and going for it. Get the punching bag light, flat on the floor, get on your knees and hit with a strike with a hammer kind of blow like that. The breathing simply means to be like this. Breathe in on the backstroke. On the forestroke, much more active. I don't want to hit the TV, but get yourself active, get yourself loud. There are three phases to that. So the first time you do that with around about 20 to 30% of your physical effort and 20 to 30% of the amount of noise you could make. Do that for about a minute or so and then take a breather for not more than a minute or so, and then go harder and louder in the second phase. So maybe 50 or 60% of what you're capable of in terms of force and in terms of loudness. And then third time, all out, having had a breather. Then third time, give it everything. And you'll find that now and then that the bag turns into somebody or something, and you can kind of really let them have it. The great advantage of this is you cannot empty the bucket if there's another person involved who's suffering. So you can have helpers. They're not suffering, they're helping. But if you inflict your anger upon a person, that doesn't empty your anger bucket, it makes it worse. So the golden rule here is that no other human being can be being made small, being diminished, being threatened, any of those sort of things. So the anger's got to come out clean. And what you'll notice, if you're working with someone who's doing some anger work, it's actually really quite a nice thing to be around, is to see somebody really go for it, because what happens is a cleansing kind of a thing. So give it a go. Once a week, probably for everyone. I said once a week for males, but you know, probably for everyone, if this is your first introduction to this kind of idea, once a week would be great for the next 6 or 8 weeks, and then maybe once a month as a method of decreasing the amount of anger in the bucket. And what that means is when it comes to doing the anger session, if you've scheduled it, which is the only sensible thing to do, you might have put it in your diary for Thursday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. When you front up to the punching bag, the big problem is going to be, but I don't feel angry. Of course you don't, because you haven't been triggered. And that's the problem, is that mostly we wait to be triggered by the circumstances around us, which means that the people who know what we are triggered by learn how to trigger it, and for those who are willing to do it, they'll manipulate us. So we need to be able to trigger it by ourselves, particularly when we're not angry. So this is the only time in your life when fake it until you make it is okay. You might have to start that anger session faking the anger and just going through the motions. Trust me, let yourself go, and the second or third go at it, you'll find some anger and away you go. Each time you do this, you're going to have a different level of anger expressed towards a punching bag. And that has a lot to do with where you are at that point in time, with all of the emotions, but it also has to do with the fact that you might have found where 2 out of 10 is on the anger scale. Because you see, we're taught that anger is something which is either full on or full off, like there's a switch. Whereas when you do some anger work, what you'll discover is that you can be 3 out of 10, 7 out of 10. Just watch out for walking away from an anger session saying to yourself, oh, I wasn't very good today. Doesn't mean that it wasn't very good. It simply means you found the 4 out of 10 place on your scale. So let it go for that. Sadness, then crying deliberately is something that most people can't do. It's a very difficult thing to say to yourself, I'm deliberately going to feel sad and make yourself that way. But you can go and get a movie that you know is going to have some great loss in it. You know, the biggest selling movie of all time before Avatar was called Titanic. Of course, you would know a boat was going to go down, and that perhaps there were some star-crossed lovers, perhaps there were some people who were meant to be together, but they came from such different backgrounds that their cultures were saying no, no, no. And so one of them goes down with the boat, one of them doesn't. And so I think that the reason for the popularity of Titanic was the intuitive understanding we were going to go into a dark room for 3 hours and have a cry. For me, having a cry, that was probably mostly about trying to make my bladder hold still for 3 hours, but nevertheless, you can have a go. And you'll know that you've had a good cry if you feel good at the end of it. Same with an anger session. When you feel whole and complete and clean on the inside here, you'll know that it's been a good one. And as far as fear is concerned, then what you need to do is find it and explore it. And to do that, pretty much you've just kind of got to talk about it. Go back to the Blockage Buster session explained in this session. That shows you how to find the fear of heights, the fear of speaking in public. Explore it and have it ease its way out of your system. So in summary, what are we going to do with these 6 emotions? Firstly, divide them into the so-called positive and negative. So those 3 so-called positive emotions, you know, could you be more loving? Could you be more joyful? Could you be more peaceful? Of course you could. You've got to use the triggers in your life. And that's, you know, you think of your mum, you think, you know what, I should ring her and tell her I love her. Pick up the phone right now. So bring those 3 positives into your day. Like I've mentioned earlier in this video, grab some friends and watch some YouTube comedy. Do whatever it takes. So allow that to move into your life, understanding that's the easy bit. What's a little bit more difficult is you look at the 3 so-called negatives, and that's anger, sadness, and fear. Once a week, do that anger session as I've described it 10 minutes ago in this video. Just, you know, if you need to have some friends around to do that, well, for goodness sake, just get on with it. Just invite them around, get the puncher bag out on the lounge, as I've described, and just go for it. And do that once a week for your own good, for the purpose of emptying the bucket. If it's sadness that you need to work on, and maybe it's both, then once again, maybe you're going to get the friends around, you're going to watch a sad movie. Once again, describe that earlier in the video for you. So I'm talking now about just getting it into action. And get that done. That means putting it in the diary. Now, when it comes to fear, so we've done some anger work once a week, we've done some sadness, maybe once a week for that as well. With the fear, there are 2 things. The first thing is, let your day-to-day life, when you get triggered into fear, say someone chops you off in the traffic, use that to turn towards it rather than and paralysis, turn towards it. What's that feel like? What's my heart doing? What's happened to my breathing? What am I doing in terms of body temperature? What does that feel like? Is it moving? Is it still? Once again, there's a complete description about that. That's kind of like using what's going on in your day-to-day life as a trigger. Secondly, deliberately get into fear. Now, we've got an entire video session earlier on in this program called the Blockage Buster session. Go watch that again and make sure you know how to do that Blockage Buster work, because that's how to process fear. Because you see, if you get the process out, if you empty those buckets, then what happens is the buckets are empty and you're neutral. And when you're neutral, what that means is that instead of reacting to things, instead of you being a victim of the circumstances and getting pushed around by what's going on in your life, then what happens is instead of reacting automatically, what you become is with the empty bucket, you have choice. And with choice, you can say, you know, how do I choose to respond to this? Someone's yelling and screaming at me. Do I choose to yell and scream back at them? Do I choose to walk away? Do I choose to just watch it and give them a score between 0 and 10 for how well they're doing? And finish with, is that the best you could do? Would you like another turn? So if you choose how you feel, that's what we call responding. Now that, my friends, is emotional intelligence at work. What it means is you're deciding what you're going to feel, when you're going to feel it, how long you're going to feel it for, to what degree, and at what time of the day, if you're choosing day or night. So that is a number one personal development skill. It's the most important thing you can ever learn. That's why I'm taking time to emphasize it. I'm sure you understand the theory. So therefore, all we're going to deal with is, how do you make this happen? Put it in your diary. You know that thing I mentioned earlier, Thursday, 2 o'clock? That's actually the most important bit, because if it's in the diary, there's a good chance you're going to go and do it. And if you do it, we know it's going to work. You know it's going to work. I know it's going to work. Get it in the diary.